The following talk, entitled A Different Look at the Bible, was recorded on the 12th of November 2023 and was presented by spiritual leader Rhonda Murray.
So some of you know that three of us here have come back from a wonderful, wonderful meditation retreat at the Lotus Eco Village, about an hour north of Wellington in the North Island of New Zealand. And we just had a fabulous time and it was just great. So next step is we're hoping to organise something similar in Australia for next year and then go back to New Zealand the year after. So start saving. All right. So Unity National School is currently running a series of Bible classes covering both the history and the metaphysical interpretation. It brings out all the relevance in our own lives. The teacher is our newest Unity minister, Rachel Watton, who spoke to us recently on the Hebrew Bible as the forecaster of the birth and life of Jesus. Finally, in the current class, which started yesterday, there were more teachers than students. And we all agreed that we find Unity's teachings on the Bible never get stale. Always learn something new every time we do it. I've been teaching it for years and still, you know, Rachel had some interesting slides, just putting things in a different way. It's not too late to join if you're interested. We've only had that first class. I've tended over the years to use the Bible in Sunday services just for metaphysical interpretation of a particular story or some particular event. But I've never shared the overview type of material that we use in the Bible classes. And Rachel's talk made me think, well, there was a lot of interest in that, so maybe I should do more of that instead of confining that sort of material to UNS and to the online classes. Modern Bible scholars have explored the writing of both books of scriptures, looking at when they were written and what was happening in that area in that time and how the various books were addressing the current circumstances, not something hundreds of years hence. Only when we understand that they meant to, and only when we understand what they meant to lives then, can we see their relevance to the situations we find ourselves in today, both on a global level and individually. So how's the mic? Is that loud enough? Are you hearing all right? I highly recommend the textbook that we use in classes, reading the Bible again for the first time. And you can see how many times I've taught from that book, but it's a fascinating book. The author, Marcus Borg, has been described as a leading figure in his generation of Jesus scholars. I found a description of the book. Borg explores what the scriptures meant to the ancient communities that produced and lived by them. He then helps us to discover the meaning of these stories, providing the knowledge and perspective to make the wisdom of the Bible an essential part of our modern lives. The author argues that the conventional way of seeing the Bible's origin, authority, and interpretation has become unpersuasive, isn't that a great word? Unpersuasive to millions of people in our time, and that we need a fresh way of encountering the Bible that takes the text seriously, but not literally, even as it takes seriously who we have become. So what's the relevance to who we have become? Our civilization, our law system, our very culture, is based on the wisdom of the Bible. And I love it that in unity, we access that wisdom by exploring the meaning of the Hebrew names of people and places in the Bibles, in our wonderful metaphysical Bible dictionary. If anybody would like to have a look at one, I'm sure our lovely librarian Jackie would be able to find one for you to have a look at. It's a fascinating book, and it is available online these days. From his studies, Borg addressed the writing of the various scrolls, we think books, but let's face it, they were scrolls, of the Hebrew scriptures, which we used to call the Old Testament. When we look at when they were written and when they were compiled into one book, we find they were originally scrolls addressing the historical circumstances of the period from 1200 BC up to the time of Jesus. Traditional 80-book Protestant Bibles include 14 books in an intertestamental section between the Old Testament and the New Testament called the Apocrypha. This covers the battles fought by the Jews against first the Greeks and then the Roman conquerors of their land, and helps us understand what was happening in Israel at the time that Jesus was born. So there's no 400-year gap, unless you're not a Protestant. In another book on the Bible, The Evolution of the Word, did you mind find us a copy of that, Jackie? I meant to remind you. It's a book that Borg wrote, giving all the letters and Gospels from the Christian Bible, New Testament, in the New Revised Standard Version, which, if you want to make sense of the Bible, as far as I'm concerned, that's the only one to read. But in between it, at the beginning of each chapter or letter or whatever, he has a few pages of explanation about the time and the place. So Christian Bible only, but it's just one of my favourite books. Unfortunately, I loaned it out, bad decision, and the friends I loaned it to are in Tasmania at the moment, so I couldn't get it back to show you, but that's another great Borg book. But in that book, Borg gives us a very enlightening timeline for the writing of the Gospels and letters which became the Christian scriptures. We probably presume from Sunday school days that the oldest account of Jesus' life was Matthew, because that's the first one in the New Testament, and that the letters of Paul were all written by him and in the order he wrote them. But no, everything's in the order of length, not age. So let me just give you a few bits and pieces about the three Gospels that are sort of all based on the one gospel, which is Mark. The trouble with me teaching Bible is I need at least 2 hours, not 20 minutes. So the difficulty for me, and even the reason I wrote it, was I thought otherwise I'm going to be raving around here and they all want to go have lunch. So taking the gospel that was written first, which was the Gospel of Mark. This was written about 40 years after Jesus' crucifixion, when the Romans destroyed Jerusalem and the temple in AD 70. You see, up until then, it was always presumed that Jesus was going to come back. There was going to be a second coming while they were still around. But, you know, he was so wonderful, how could he possibly just disappear on them? And so it was only when they all got sent out of Israel, and particularly out of Jerusalem, and their temple was again destroyed, that any of them started to think, well, maybe we should be writing down some of this stuff about what Jesus taught. And so whoever Mark was, and we don't know, was one who addressed that situation. So the Jews were banished in what was later referred to as the diaspora, scattering around the Mediterranean. So instead of waiting around for Jesus to return, The writer decided to record what he could of Jesus' life and teachings. The original Gospel of Mark started with John the Baptist. So no birth story, no pregnant virgin. And it finished with the women at the tomb being greeted by a young man dressed in a white robe. A young man dressed in a white robe. Sounds like a monk to me. And they fled in fear from the tomb. So no angels, no appearances, no being taken up to sit on the right hand of God. All that's in the bits that were added on to the end. But I loved the little boy who was traveling with his grandma, and they were driving through some beautiful autumn trees. And she said to her grandson, "Look at the beautiful landscape that God has painted for us." And the little boy said, "Yeah, and he painted it with his left hand too." And she said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, Jesus sits on his right hand." So Mark gives us some lovely parables, like the one about Jesus stilling the water during the storm. And what did we just think about? We all have the power to say to our stormy moods and negative thoughts, "Peace, be still." I actually tried it out once in a boat on a very, where a storm had come up, and we were some distance from where we had to get to with the boat, and the water got very choppy and the clouds got very dark and it became a little scary. So I actually thought, well, Jesus said we can do what he did, so I'm going to give it a go, and it worked. But even the Gospel of Mark wasn't the first account of Jesus' life. The seven letters actually written by St. Paul date back to the 50s. The negative ones, by the way, were written at a later era after Paul's death, so they certainly weren't written by Paul. So all the ones that have given Paul a bad name that we don't like, no, he didn't write those. That might be the subject of a later talk, perhaps. So the next gospel to be written was in the 80s. So we're now talking 50 years after the crucifixion of Jesus. It included most of the Gospel of Mark, plus some other material that must have been floating around at that time, and which, because there's no copies of it around today, it's just called the Q document, being French for a quell, what? So it's like the question mark document. And plus many quotes from the Hebrew scriptures. None of the Gospels were written by disciples who were with Jesus. But personally, I like to think that the Sermon on the Mount that we find in Matthew and briefer versions of it in the other Gospels may have been written from notes written by Matthew, who was a scribe, so he could read and write. And who knows, maybe he made a few notes on what Jesus taught. Such notes could easily have been passed on through two or three generations and incorporated into the gospel as we read it today. It's very detailed and it's very congruent, instead of a bit of this and a bit of that. And to me, it sounds true to Jesus' teachings, just that chapters 5, 6, and 7. In fact, if you're not a Bible reader and you want to just try reading some Bible, I suggest start with Matthew chapters 6 and 7. It's, you know, the kernel of Jesus' teachings. There you will find things like love your enemies. Do not worry about your life, you know, that whole big long passage. Strive first for the kingdom, and all these things will be added. In other words, stop worrying and keep your mind on the good. Also, my favorite, ask and it will be given. Seek and you will find. What a wonderful recipe for life if we could just remember every day to ask, knowing it will be given, and to seek, knowing we will find, and of course, knock, and the door will be opened. Up until about this time, the followers of Jesus were still part of the Jewish community, well, part of the temple until AD 70 when it was destroyed, but after that, wherever they were meeting around, scattered around different countries. So the followers of Jesus were still practicing Jews. For various reasons I don't have time to go into here, they started to split from the Jews. And particularly from around that time, many of Jesus' followers were Gentiles, totally non-Jewish. Whoever wrote the Gospel of Matthew was writing to the Jews to convince them that Jesus was the long-awaited Messiah. So he used Midrash. Now, Midrash is a Jewish term for writing the present back into the past, trying to make sense of the present and what's happening today by referring back to the past. Don't we do it with the political situation in the Middle East when we think about, you know, the happenings back around the time of the Second World War and after the Second World War? We've got to go back there to make sense of what's happening today. But it's like writing that into today as part of today's history. So Midrash, where are we? The first two chapters of Matthew, by the way, are not found in early versions of the book. They were later editions in the 4th century. The original version, like Mark, started with the description of John the Baptist, so chapter 3 in Matthew. This eliminates the story of Herod killing Hebrew babies, totally unsubstantiated by Roman records, and the trip into Egypt. Perhaps the compiler of Matthew wanted Jesus to come out of Egypt like Moses did, because Moses was the big prophet. So the third gospel that we're going to have a brief look at is the Gospel of Luke. And again, we move forward quite a bit in time to the year somewhere around 110 AD. So Luke was the last gospel written, so about 80 years after Jesus' crucifixion. By this time, there was a greater split between the Jewish community and the followers of Jesus. And more of the Christ followers were Gentiles, were non-Jews. And Luke was possibly not Jewish. He writes in a Greco-Roman style for the Greeks and Romans who were becoming followers of Jesus. He also uses Mark as his basis and quotes the Hebrew scriptures, but his Jesus stories have more in common with Roman and Greek gods than the others. And that's an interesting subject to explore. He's the only one to tell the story of the journey to Bethlehem for Joseph and Mary to be registered. There's no record of anything like that in the Roman records. But Bethlehem gets a mention back in the Hebrew scriptures, so we had to have Jesus born in Bethlehem. Yeah. The word Christ is the Greek translation of the Hebrew word Messiah, chosen one, appointed one. So the term Christian simply meant followers of the Messiah. But Jesus taught that we're all chosen ones, needing to turn to the kingdom within. We can all be more than followers of the Christ. We can be expressions of that Christ presence within us. Now, that's a big one, so I'm going to repeat it. We can all be more than followers of the Christ. We can be expressions of the Christ presence within us. So, bringing all these stories into the present day, after yesterday's religious fighting in Melbourne, the Victorian Premier, Jacinta Allen, said there was no place for anti-Semitism or Islamophobia in Victoria. I think we would say there's no place for anti-Semitism or Islamophobia in Australia. Do you agree? A non-Unity friend asked me recently, does Silent Unity pray for the Jews or the Palestinians? I replied, we pray for all people who are suffering, so both. The rise of anti-Semitism came from the ignorant belief that the Jews killed Jesus. In fact, Jesus was a Jew who had studied the Jewish scriptures, possibly in Egypt, where the original Levite priests fled to escape first the Greeks and then the Romans. Jesus' followers in his lifetime were Jews, and he taught in the temple. He actually taught from the scroll of Isaiah. And it was noted that he opened that scroll, he opened that truth, he put a new meaning into the words of that scroll. Roman authority is well documented, and it's clear that only they had the power to order punishment by death. Of course, this was hushed up when the early Christians were mediating acceptance by the Romans, and I know Grace will be clapping her hands. That's one of her favourite subjects. After the horrors of the Nazi atrocities in the Second World War, I can only have sympathy for the surviving Jews wanting to return to their old home country after the war. But I pray also for the Palestinians who have suffered so much since British occupation and earlier. For the two separate and different religious groups to learn to share the same country in peace will be a miracle. But we know miracles happen. So let's pray for it. Let's affirm it as a possibility, as something that can happen for the highest good of both lots of people. Let's join Premier Allen in not accepting the fighting about it in our own country. Metaphysically, we need to ask ourselves what opposing beliefs we might hold about our own life. What disagreements might we be caught up in? Let's use Jesus' words, peace, be still, to learn to live our own lives in peace and harmony. For that's the metaphysical truth, that the greatest good that we can do out there in the world is to get our own thinking, our own beliefs straight, to work on our own consciousness and affirm the highest good for every being on this planet. Let's take that thought into meditation. Let's give our bodies permission to relax. To release anything that might disturb the calm peace of our souls. to say to every part of our being, peace, be still. Let's say it to every cell of the body, affirming perfect wholeness and knowing for every part of the body, peace, be still. Let's affirm it for our thinking, our thoughts. Let's just release any thoughts that are running through our mind. And to just know for our thinking, peace, be still. And when we check our thinking, we also need to check our feeling, our mood. And so let's say to our emotions, our feelings, our moods, peace, be still. And then as we turn to spirits within, we can know that peace that passes all understanding. And we say to our spiritual self, peace, be still, peace, be still, be still and know that I am God. Be still and know the Christ within. Be still and know that I am. Be still and know. Be still. Be. Just be in the silence. Be. And as we sit in the silence, let's know this truth for all people everywhere that are facing any sort of conflict or trauma. Let's know for them, be still. Be still and know. Be still and know the presence within you. Peace. Be still. Peace. Be still.